Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now celebrating 17 years of broadcasting success, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both on the radio dial here in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM and WYADonline.com. We're glad that you all could be with us. Also, just tuning in through our online affiliates around the world, including our friends at Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and Amazon Music Podcast. Glad you all could be with us as well. We're excited to welcome Robin Broad and John Cavanaugh to our program today to talk about their brand-new book called The Water Defenders, How Ordinary People Saved a Country from Corporate Greed. As you guys know, I love a great story, and this one is a true story of how people were able to be able to stand up, to be able to take a stand, and even though that there was a price to be paid, were willing to be able to do what it takes to make a difference. We'll talk to Robin and John not only about the writing of the book, but the living of the experience and being able to share this story now with all of us. If you all are just now finding out about the Water Defenders, we'll let you know how to get your own copy. But Robin, John, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Hello. It's a great delight to be with you and your listeners today, Cyrus.
Yeah, same here.
Hey, the pleasure is definitely all mine. I was saying to you all before we went on the air here, and I want to say it again for our radio audience, this book is so powerful, and even though, I mean, it is at times hard to read because it's unfortunate that we live in a world where you know people have to be afraid for their lives just to do what's right. But I love the fact that, Robin, and I begin this conversation with you, that you all in the work you've been able to do, you've been able to share, of course, what are some of the, you know, atrocities that have been happening in the world, but also these glimmers of hope. What has it been like for you to be able to share that balance, Robin, of, yes, there are injustices, but there are also people who are willing to stand up to do what's right?
You know, that's a great question, Cyrus. I'm not even sure we think about it. So John and I have been doing this work for decades. We are, by the way, married. We met in graduate school. So it's just our lives. And like it won't surprise many of your listeners or you to say that we consider it an honor to be able to work with people like those we wrote about in northern El Salvador who are ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And to walk with them, to be with them in battles that are not necessarily right versus left, but are right versus wrong. And along the way, we don't find ourselves saying, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. Well, I guess we do sometimes. But we all together just share such hope for the possibilities of change.
Yeah. And that possibility is something I think that we definitely see in the book. John, I'm going to go to you on that, to the point that Robin was making. What is it that led you all in this work? What was it that made you say this was something you wanted to do?
Sure. Well, in the work, we both lived in the Philippines. We've lived in Latin America. So we keep an ear open to good opportunities. For me, I work at the Institute for Policy Studies. We give a human rights award every year to outstanding people fighting for human rights in the U.S. and Latin America. And in 2009, the selection committee brought this group of very little-known folks from northern El Salvador who were taking on mining companies. And so the award was going to be given to them. Normally, people come for a couple of days to Washington to get the award, and we do all we can for them, and then they leave. Now, this was different for two reasons. One, about a month after we told them about the award and they'd selected five people to come get it, we got the horrible news that one of them, a wonderful cultural worker and teacher named Marcelo Rivera, had been assassinated brutally in northern El Salvador, of course shocking us. They shared the details with us, and then they asked if his brother Miguel could come in his place. So we knew this was a different story then, and then when they came to receive the award, after this beautiful ceremony with about 500 people telling us of their valiant fight there, they came to us afterwards, Miguel did, the brother of the assassinated teacher, and he asked us if we could help. He told us both they needed help researching the company, and he told us this astounding news that his country was being sued in a tribunal here in Washington by the mining companies, and they knew very little about it and asked if we would help. And here we are 12 years later right now, and this pulled Robin and me and thousands of others from the U.S. and around the world into this story. And again, you know, Cyrus, to your first question, we knew we had very little chance of winning, and you'll see this when we start to unravel the story. And yet it was so empowering to be working with these people that we felt it was worthwhile even if we lost.
And to that point, Robin, and that does come out in the book, John, and to that point, Robin, what was it about you? Because, again, the thing that I think people – well, I'm going to ask you about if you realize you were going to be so much of the story later. But, Robin, the thing that comes up in this book is that you are willing to try. We all know that there are people who hear about things all the time, and they say, oh, that's horrible. I'm so sorry that happened. I'm so sorry you're dealing with that. And that's really as far as it goes. What do you think that makes John and you say, that's horrible, we want to see what we can do to help?
So your questions are great, but a little embarrassing for us to answer, I think, because we don't think of ourselves as being so special or so unique. So we just jump in, like many people around the world. We knew, as John said, there was the mining company had sued the government of El Salvador in the secretive court arbitration venue that's in the World Bank Group in Washington, D.C. The water defenders didn't understand this. Understandably, they didn't understand how this was possible. How could it be that the fate of their community, the fate of their country in terms of what mining would have done to their watersheds, their rivers, how could it be that the decision of whether or not to allow mining was going to be decided in a court that they didn't even have access to? So this is a court, the International Center for Settlement of Investment Disputes, or ICSID, where companies can sue countries for putting in place laws that take away the company's future profit. That's an incredible idea. It's not to compensate for investment made, but future profit. So the mining company sued the government of El Salvador for $300 million because the country of El Salvador, the government, was doing what Marcelo Miguel, their friend Vidalina Morales, and other just regular people wanted the country government to do, which is to keep mining out. And they said to us, we actually had expertise in these international economic institutions like the World Bank. So I think when we began, we thought we were doing what anyone with a little bit of research or history on these institutions would do. We thought we were volunteering to do research, pro bono, of course, for a day or two. But the story was so compelling, and they were such incredible people. I don't know at what point we fell in love with them, if you'll allow me to use that term. But at some point, this became not just about right versus wrong, but also became a work of trust, of love, of commitment on both sides.
Yeah. John, I want to actually share something from the book to kind of go along with what Robin was saying, and I think it kind of helps our audience for those who are just finding out about the book. In Chapter 2, A New Pact with the Devil, for those who have the hardcover edition on page 44, you all share something, and I think it is so powerful, and to add to this conversation what we're talking about here, what they call, you know, a pact with the devil. You all write in the book, the old miner glanced at the priest as if fearing disapproval, but the priest's face was not registering any disapproval. And so the old miner repeated, mining is a pact with the devil. You go on to say, as we reflected on the miner's story and descended into the century-old mine, we were reminded of what we knew from our own research. Because of accidents, disease, and exposure to toxic chemicals, mining is one of the deadliest occupations on Earth. But reading the statistics is one thing. Seeing the reality for oneself is another. So I want to talk about that, because as you go on to talk about this place and not being able to not be changed by it, John, what was it like for you to go from hearing from this brother to being able to see this for yourself?
You know, it's a really great point, and to tell you how good organizers, our Salvadoran friends, were, they basically brought Robin and me on the same path they'd walked down, meaning the mining companies come in, they say, we're going to give you jobs and prosperity, take it. And the first reaction of almost everyone in El Salvador and around the world when this happens is, great, we'd love these jobs. The Salvadorans had many connections with communities where there were mines, most closest by just across their giant river, the Lempa River in Honduras. So they went, they saw, and they saw the horrors. The problem, Cyrus, is that mining, gold mining uses cyanide to separate the gold from the rock, which then leaches out all sorts of other horrible things that are in the rock. It kills the fish, it gives you skin diseases, and many other problems. So they'd gone there, they'd then gone to eastern El Salvador where that scene was that you just read, and there's both arsenic and there's also a lot of iron around the gold. So it continues to leach iron into the waters, and when they brought us there, we'd heard about this place. But it is shocking to walk to a river and see rusty orange water flowing out of the stream, and this near a mine that hadn't been operating for over a decade. So just everybody, that should sink in for a minute. Once you start mining and you expose these rocks and all the toxic materials that are around them, it can continue to leach into the water and soil and make it undrinkable for hundreds of years to come. So we were shocked. Also, the notion that you can't even walk into the river near your home because you'll get skin diseases. Think of that. And think of that with water, which we all, if we stop drinking water for 3.5 days, we die. So this is the most essential element here. So I think, now Robin and I were already sucked into the story, but this made us determined to do everything we could to help them win.
Right. And that is the point that I think is so big. I want to say for those who are just coming into the program, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We were just hearing there from John Cavanaugh. Also, we have Robin Broad with us, the co-authors of the new book, The Water Defenders, How Ordinary People Saved a Country from Corporate Greed. So now, Robin, I'll ask the question, because I did not know this when the book was pitched to me, that so much of the story was going to be your participation in it. So I wanted to ask you, did you know going into the book that a lot of this was going to be, yes, the story that you had heard, yes, what was happening, but also your involvement in it?
Well, we knew. We did not know in 2009 when we met the Water Defenders. We had no idea that we would be involved for more than a couple of days. We then went through this court case, this arbitration case that went on for 7 long years. During that period, John and I and others in this group we set up called International Allies of the Water Defenders in El Salvador, we were going back to El Salvador at least once a year. And in that period, we didn't even dream of writing a book about it. Our focus was on doing what we could on the international side of this fight. And I think that's a key thing to say, is that we did not go in saying we're the experts, we have the pedigrees, we can tell you what to do. We went in saying, you all in La Mesa, you all the Water Defenders in El Salvador, you are the experts on El Salvador. We will take our guidance on what to do in El Salvador from you. And if you all say that you want, your goal is a law, becoming the first country to pass a law to ban metals mining, then we will set up work on an international level that supports that. But we said, this isn't just a fight about El Salvador. This is a fight that includes global corporations in the U.S., in Canada, in Australia. And this is also a fight that involves a global institution, that court at the World Bank Group. And they said to us, we're not experts on the global side, so we need your help on the global side. We will take our guidance from you. So it really became a very equal alliance where we spent a lot of time with each other. And it was only after both of those fights, both of those struggles against against the mining company and then for a law banning mining. And I'm not going to spoil the plot if I say to your, to you and your listeners, you already know it, Cyrus, but El Salvador did indeed become, in March 2017, the first country in the world to ban metals mining, gold mining, silver mining, and the like, to save its water. More than half of that country depends on one key river. You destroy that river, and not only don't you have water for drinking, you don't have water for farming, you don't have water for living. But only after those victories did we step back and say, oh my gosh, someone has to write this book. And as we started telling the story to others, people who are great writers among them, they said to us, you have to write this book as almost as if it's a novel. You have to write this book as the story that it is, focusing both on the people in northern El Salvador who are the heroes of the story, but also we were extremely lucky because the mining company executives would not talk to us. They would not give us interviews. They wouldn't even let us in to tour the mines, although they said they would let anyone in. But we were extremely lucky because through very legal means, we ended up with a treasure trove of documents, internal emails, letters, and all that from the mining company executives. So we are able in the book to share not only what the water defenders were saying and thinking, but also to defend without any question the words of the mining executives. And that's what led us to think, okay, we need to write this book.
John, to that point, I think one of the things that is shared in the book is that when people think about what we're discussing here, when we think about what happened to Marcelo, when we think about the damage that can be done to lives, you know, there is the other side of that that people sometimes will focus on, and that is what they look at as the economic cost, right, of all of this. As you write about in the book in Chapter 4, Local Terror, Global Extortion, you talk about, of course, how, you know, in what was happening in 2009 when it comes to gold prices, right, and the way that people were focusing their attention, but also how people like Marcelo and others, as you say, that they were making life complicated for, you know, for them. So what was that like for you? Because really, even as you all are talking here, I'm sure our audience is feeling the way I'm feeling. You had to know after being able to hear about what happened to Marcelo, describing what you do in this particular chapter that I just referenced about what his family had to deal with, that this was dangerous, right? I mean, you knew what you could be getting into, right, John?
Sure. Well, and this won't come as a surprise to anyone. In mining, as in oil and natural gas extraction, these industries are incredibly lucrative. I mean, just imagine today, if you have 1 ounce of gold, this tiny little 1 ounce of gold, you can get $1,800. So as prices of these minerals went up over the last 20 years, more and more big companies said, oh my God, we got to get out there and mine more of this. And what they do is they dangle to local officials and national government officials. They say, we're going to give you a percentage of the profits. It's a small percentage. It's 1% to the local officials, 1% to the national officials. But if you're a local mayor in the town where Marcelo and Miguel lived, it's a huge amount of money. So as the water defenders learned about the dangers and began to organize incredibly creatively, and they used... You'll love this, Cyrus. They use radio beautifully, community radio, to spread the story. Then the people who stand to benefit can do some very bad things. And around Latin America, actually being an environmental defender is one of the most dangerous professions. Thousands of people have been killed because so much money is at stake. Now, I will say, since you brought this to the personal level, Cyrus, as gringos, white people, Robin and I are both white, in El Salvador, we do have a layer of protection that they don't. Up in the north, it is a bit like the Wild West. The part where the mining companies wanted to come in was very conservative. The mayors were part of a very conservative party that was linked back into a death squad period in El Salvador during its civil war. So incredibly dangerous for them. We felt that. But we knew that most people would not kill a white person in a country that depends on U.S. aid and assistance. We were deeply concerned about their safety. And, you know, when we stayed overnight there in northern El Salvador and at this wonderful organization that helps farmers shift to organic agriculture, we were aware they would lock the gates at night. And it soon hit Robin and me that it wasn't really for our safety, it was for their safety as well. And that's a daily reality. And the fact that they fought for, in the end, this battle for them was 14 years, knowing those dangers, watching Marcelo and three others be killed, gives you a sense of how important water and land are to the people of this area and around the world.
Yeah. Robin, in the book, one of the most powerful things you all say in the epilogue, again, for those who have the hardcover edition on page 189, is this. Whether you agree with this or not, any such miracle would not have occurred without the blood, sweat, tears, and doggedness of so many who had so much to lose. And I think that is the big thing here. I mean, whether we're talking about Marcelo's brother and asking you for help, for yourself in agreeing to help, and so many others, unlikely allies, even as you all discuss in the book, that came to the aid. I think that is the point. What did you hope for us? I'm sure, you know, being able to share the story, for one thing, we now know who Marcelo is, for those of us who would not have otherwise without this book. But what is your hope, Robin, and then John, feel free to chime in, for people who read this book, who are discovering this for the first time, and then want to know, What should they be looking for in their own corner of the world?
So thank you for referencing the book so much, Cyrus. So just to put that in context, that's a sentence or two that comes right after we say that the then Archbishop, so this is in 2019, the Archbishop who was in the end involved with the, who helped lead the fight to get Congress to ban mining in El Salvador. The Archbishop says to us, we're asking people, why did it happen? What did it take? And he says to us, it was a miracle. It was a miracle, and it's God's work. And that's where we say, whether you think it's God's work or not, we don't say this to him, of course, but we say to the reader, it wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened without starting, and most importantly, it wouldn't have happened without people like Marcelo, with this very strong, very committed grassroots social movement, who, in terms of your prior questions, they were the ones who were most in danger. I mean, every time we went to El Salvador, we were not so much worried about us. Of course, we were taking a lot of precautions, but we were worried about the danger that our presence would bring to them, because we were we stood out in an area where there aren't many visitors. But in terms of why we wrote the book, well, I guess at a very basic level, you got it. We wrote the book because someone needed to write down Marcelo's story. It's part of how Marcelo lives on. But we wrote the book because we wanted to spread the hope. We wanted to let people know that if you think of most of the stories you hear about big corporations, or we tend to hear about big corporations, these David versus Goliath fights, Goliath tends to win. We wanted people to know that there can be these big, all over the world, people are taking on global corporations. Most of the fights of today are against corporations, be it against Walmart or against a pipeline or against a big fossil fuel company or against fracking. We wanted people to know that there can be victories. You certainly don't, along the way, see that those victories, we didn't expect those victories to happen. We actually never said to one another, we're going to lose, this is not going to work. You just have to, you have to hope. So we wanted to share the hope because so this is a story about El Salvador, but not just about El Salvador. If economically poorer people in small economically poorer El Salvador can choose water over gold, instead of gold over water, then really there's hope for any people in any country to do it. If El Salvador can do it, anyone can do it. At the same time, we wanted to share the story of how big corporations, the tactics they use to fight back. And also share the realities, as you say. This book is not, there's a lot of joy in this book. There's a lot of fun. The Water Defenders were really fun. They did really fun demonstrations. But they also, there's terror in this book. But in the end, there's hope. And in the end, we never met Marcelo, but I bet if Marcelo could visit us today, he would say, I wouldn't do anything differently. It was all worthwhile.
Yeah, and if I could just add, Cyrus, thank you. Wonderful question. Building on what Robin said, there are a million things listeners can do. Of course, everyone listening cares about water. We're all more aware that it is endangered in this country. It's scarcer. There's drought in the West. You all in Mississippi, Texas, other places, your water pipes crack this winter in the freeze. And just as the people of El Salvador stood up against these mining companies, people across the U.S. are standing up to corporations that are pushing private profit over the right to water. Today, I've been working with people in northern Minnesota that are trying to stop a huge oil pipeline and pressing the Biden administration to cut off the permit for this pipeline. And hundreds of people have been arrested. There's a number of indigenous leaders in jail right now in northern Minnesota. And people can get out and tell their members of Congress to press Biden to stop that pipeline. Likewise, in Arizona, the Apache are fighting to save their sacred land at a place called Oak Flats against a giant copper mining company. Once again, press the Biden administration to withdraw the permit for this mining company to operate. So there's lots of things that people can do. And finally, and here's again a potential good news ending here, you all in Mississippi, all around the country, we need a whole new upgraded water infrastructure system. We need to get rid of the lead pipes that still send water to over 10 million people in this country. And there's a lot of money in a bill, a big infrastructure bill that Biden and Congress are trying to pass in the fall, and press for them to put as much money as possible into upgrading our water infrastructure in this country. Everybody here has a voice. Everyone can join in, and you can learn from and be inspired from the Water Defenders of El Salvador.
Such a great message and such a great conversation. I really appreciate the two of you all being on. Again, Robin Broad and John Cavanaugh have been our guests. The book is The Water Defenders, How Ordinary People Saved a Country from Corporate Greed. You can get it through our friends at Amazon.com or through your favorite local bookstore if they don't have it. I know they'd be more than happy to order it for you. And John, how can our audience stay connected with you all?
Sure. Just come to my institute's website, Institute for Policy Studies, which is ips-dc.org. And you can learn both more about the book, but also about the International Allies group that's now working with water defenders in many countries around the world.
All right. Well, Robin, John, thank you so much again for stopping by the show. I really appreciate the time and looking forward to having the two of you back again.
Thanks, Cyrus. It's been great fun.
Yep. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Now let's go make today amazing. Take care.